Welcome to the Pin Down, a Detroit Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys. And back from gallivanting overseas, we got the man, Blake Silverman from Detroit Bad Boys. Blake, welcome back, my friend.
Thank you, Wes. And special shout out to Brady and Sean for holding it down and filling in while I was out. Really appreciated it. And Wes, you for keeping the ship running. But yeah, I'm back. I was over in Africa for a couple weeks, just exploring and running around and trying to pay attention to the Pistons when I could. Was a little tough because they played in like the middle of the night where I was, but when I was off the sleep schedule, I was able to like catch a few games because I was already up. But as it got later, it was tough tuning in to the middle of the night, but I'm back. I've caught up on everything and I'm ready to roll.
All right. Just to make everyone a little bit jealous, because I know I am already. So I got to bring all you guys, all our listeners in with me on this. Tell us a little bit about this trip that you just went on, because it sounds like a fantastic experience.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was a family trip that's been in the works for honestly years now. So once in a lifetime kind of thing. We were in East Africa, rolling around in Kenya and Tanzania. We essentially made a big circle going to different national parks and cities every few days. Saw like a bunch of animals, everything around. It's incredible. If anyone ever has a chance to go, I would definitely recommend it. We were lucky enough the last day we saw like a lion with two cubs, which we saw plenty of lions, but didn't really see any baby ones. So that was like incredible and like surreal and really just like how close you can get. And it's just like nature at its finest. So it was incredible. Again, couldn't recommend it more.
Yeah, you know, I think I speak for all of us when I say I was following your Twitter page just for more videos of the wildlife you're coming across, because that was pretty awesome. All right. Hey, and before we get going, wanted to get this shout out up from No Frown Motown. Might be the last No Frown Motown in Detroit, but we appreciate you, man. He wanted to shout out the last two guest hosts. That's Brady and Sean Corp. He says they're both excellent. And obviously, we agree they did a great job. We're definitely going to have them back on here in the future. In the future, with Blake as well, it won't just be an either or situation, because, you know, can't have too much of a good thing, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. Couldn't thank Brady and Sean enough. And yeah, when Brady was on, it was like right when I was getting overseas. So I wasn't on the sleep schedule yet, and I was able to tune in for a bit. I think that was right after the first Utah loss, which plenty to talk about there, but we don't need to revisit that. We have another Utah loss to talk about.
Yeah, I was going to say, we are recording now a day after the second Utah loss, the most points the Detroit Pistons have scored in Utah. So that's a positive. That's also probably the most points they've given up in Utah. So that's a negative. But, you know, I wanted to stay a little bit more positive. We wanted to focus on some of the good things going on this past calendar year, even though there hasn't been a lot of wins. So we pressed ourselves. We tried to think of three things. You know, three things that we are thankful for this past year, just, you know, keeping with counting our blessings here after New Year's. So happy New Year's to you. And because I thought of the idea, why don't you go first?
Oh, man. All right. I'm actually going to adjust my order because I filled mine out after yours. And I think we both have one about Jaden Ivey. So a little bit of a spoiler alert. I'm not going to go with that one now. I'm going to make a little bit of a stretch here and say that I'm thankful for Kevin Knox, which I feel like is wild to say. But, you know, I have really just like enjoyed having him as the end of the bench guy the past couple years. Yeah, there's up and downs. Yeah, are we not sure how long his like career in the league is going to be? But just when you're able to like plug and play a guy like that, and he fills the position that is the glaring hole on this roster, what he did in that streak snapping game against Toronto, where he was in the starting lineup, making shots, making some effort plays, playing defense. I just think having a guy like that is super important. Again, I know I'm making a bit of a stretch here, but I just enjoy watching Kevin Knox play. Wes, what are you grateful for?
I really like the Kevin Knox call out, by the way, just before I give my own, because Kevin Knox, I think I tweeted this, but he's displaying the exact archetype of player that this roster desperately needs. He can make open shots when he gets them. He's athletic around the hoop, and he's not a turnstile on defense. He can stay in front of guys. He's not the best defender in the world, but he'll put effort in. He'll use his length. He'll put in basically okay defensive possessions. And so if you could like imagine Kevin Knox and then make him 2, 3, 4 times better than Kevin Knox is, you'd really have a long-term answer. So I think that's kind of the archetype they need to be targeting. It's nice to have a drugstore version, though, because, man, did they seriously need it. For mine, I am going to take just the easy answer. Blake did a lot better picking the three that maybe weren't the first that come to mind. Mine's Cade Cunningham. Look, he's healthy. He's playing like we all think he can and all thought he could on draft night, and that is at an all-star level. Let me just give out the December averages. I know everyone's talked about it, but it's 25.2 points, 4.8 rebounds, 7.5 assists, and he's shooting 50% from the floor, 35% from three, and 86% from the line. Like, you could not ask more from him. And even on top of that, only 2.9 turnovers per game. So he's taken everything that, a lot of people were really concerned about with him after his rookie year, right? He's not getting into the line a lot. He's turning the ball over too much. He's not all that efficient. Well, he's fixed all three of those things over this past month. And outside of that Rockets game where he was gassed and just looked like he didn't have too much to give, he's been that good ever since. And I am very thankful for that. Cade is who we thought he was.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing with that is like what we were talking about the whole start of the season with the turnovers, like getting that cleaned up. And like he has done that on top of everything else he's doing, the way he's making plays, making shots. Like you said, we have just seen everything that we thought he was. And I think everyone was collectively concerned that whether he was the guy or not. He's showing that he can be. Like, he hasn't been able to show that he can be a guy on like a winning team yet, but he showed that he probably could be. So I think that's a great one and a no-brainer. My other one, or my second one, another little out of the box one. I'm grateful for the Motor City Crews. They are a good basketball team in Detroit, which I think we all need. They're 3-1 to start their regular season, which the G League splits their season into like two separate parts, the showcase and the regular season. So they just started the regular season. I think we're all just yearning for some like winning and a team to root for. So I recommend that everyone just checks out the Crews when they're looking for some good basketball to watch. A lot of exciting players, a lot of guys that maybe the Pistons bring some guys down, use some people from the Crews. So yeah, they've just been great this whole year and are an interesting team, and they're just fun.
I don't have much to add on the Crews. I haven't watched them. But for all of our listeners out there, Blake covers the Crews. So if you want to learn more about them, please, follow him, follow all the stuff that he's putting out on him. It's great. Winning basketball in Detroit, that'd be fantastic. So sure, go to the G League. Let's go. I love it. Before I give my next one here, and this next one's going to be on Jaden Ivey, just wanted to shout out anyone listening live on Twitter. You guys actually can now put in comments, put in questions, and obviously like our live chat here on YouTube, we'll also answer those as well. So my second one that I'm thankful for over the past calendar year, it's a very specific Jaden Ivey thing. It's that he's consistently said and believes that he's not a point guard. I know a lot of people, a lot of analysts have talked about him needing the ball Jaden Ivey says, no, he doesn't really need the ball. He doesn't see himself that way. He said it pre-draft that he's not a point guard. He said it last season a few times that he's not a point guard and he wants to play off guys. And he just said it a couple of days ago as well, that he thinks he's best playing off Cade Cunningham, not being the primary initiator, distributor, all that kind of stuff. So for me, I'm just thankful that you've got a guy that talented that also doesn't have an ego to him and just sees himself as a guy that wants to score and wants to make it work with this backcourt partner any way he can. That's awesome. That's great long-term. I'm very thankful for that from Jaden Ivey.
Yeah, and that's like knowing your role, I feel like is huge. Like it's just like amazing to have a guy that self-aware in his second year. And like, that's the role he was at Purdue as well. So it's just nice, especially when there's all those like fit concerns and whatever, and just trying to know that Ivy can play alongside Cade is huge. And they both know it. And that I'll parlay that into my last one, 'cause it's also about Jaden Ivey. I've just loved his mentality and I guess just kind of like the fight he's been playing with. Just talking about the game in Utah specifically, like he got into that little like scrap with Chris Dunn where Dunn like kind of just held him up when they got tied up, and Ivy like got right back up and popped in his face and was barking at him. I love to see that. I mean, it just brings energy from the team. Also, like, he has just been making consistent effort on both ends of the floor. Like, you can see it when he plays and also when he talks about it. Like, also in Utah, he was the halftime interview, and he was very short in the interview. He was like, I gave up a couple threes, got to be better. And I think it was right before half, he gave up like a 4-point play opportunity and then missed on a rotation. So we know the defensive concerns with Ivy, but I think he's like showing effort there. So at least that part is there. Like, that just tells me he can improve. And I don't know, there's something about him where he just like seems to have that dog in him, really. Like, I've just like what I've seen, especially. I feel like the losing streak has been getting to him and the rest of the guys, but as it should. So yeah, I think Ivy can become a little bit of like a leader for this team as well.
I'm completely with you. I think just like mentality wise, like, I think Ivy gets it, right? So, you know, knows his role. He's putting in high effort on both ends. A YouTube user here brings up the rebounding. Yeah, absolutely. And you want to know what those offensive rebounds are for a guard that's playing out in the perimeter as much as he does? That's just effort. He's just crashing hard to try and go get the ball. Love seeing that. Absolutely love seeing that. And I will say, too, with Jaden Ivey's defense recently, he's not the best defender, but you bring up the effort. And the effort is what is allowing him to make up for it, right? Because he doesn't stay in front the best. He'll miss rotations from time to time. But he's athletic enough to recover from that. Like, if someone blows by him, he's been able to get back in front before giving up a wide open layup a few times, I've noticed in these past games. And yeah, you know, you'd really like it if he didn't get blown by in the first place. But the fact that he can get back, and that's almost entirely based on him being locked in and playing with high effort, absolutely love to see that. So I think there's a lot buildable there with Jaden Ivey. All right, my last one. This one might be a little bit of a hot take, Blake. So I'm just going to warn everyone. But the last thing that I'm thankful for this past calendar year is actually Monty Williams. Not specifically because of anything that he's done on the court yet. It hasn't really worked so far. He still seems to be figuring out the roster, figuring out rotations. Who knows if that'll come or not. But the thing with Monty Williams is that we have years and years of evidence that says he's a very, very good coach, borderline great coach. He's proven it time and time again at multiple spots that he's a great coach, which now makes it two proven great coaches in a row choosing to come coach in Detroit. Dwayne Casey first, coming off that coach of the year, very well respected in Toronto, comes to Detroit. Sure, it didn't work out. He ends up getting replaced. But then you do the same thing again with Monty Williams, highly respected, very well thought of. I think even though, like I said, it's not been going well so far, just as a proof of concept, it kind of pushes the message that there are young pieces here in Detroit to be excited about. Monty chose this for a reason. He didn't have to show or to come to Detroit. He didn't have to do it, but he liked the pieces enough to want to come to Detroit and coach. And on top of that, it shows that at least on some level, the organization is capable of recruiting high-level talent that could have gone to any other team, but convinced them to come here. So I think both of those things are very positive for the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've always loved Monty Williams, but I think this season, like coming to Detroit, like he's definitely made some questionable decisions, like, and how he's managed the rotations, who he's giving minutes to, and changing things like on a whim, like someone having a great game and then just parking him on the bench for the most of the game. But like you said, he does have like the history there. I mean, when he was a player and what he's done as a coach, he's always been kind of that connector, I guess, probably a buzzword, but especially with what he did in Phoenix, like I just can't look past that really. Just from how he built that team, like where they were and how he managed it and how they like took that next step with him as their leader. It hasn't gone to plan so far. And I think some of his decision-making should be questioned. There's no question that he's a great coach. I'd like to see the roster around him be a little bit better, give him more to work with. Also just like missing guys has made things a little challenging. There's no question that he's a good coach. I feel like it's not like we hired a guy that will never be a coach again. We know he can do it in this league. Is this the right place for him? Is it going to work out? I don't know. Like it's honestly not looking great right now, but we know he's done it before at least.
Yeah, and I'll say I have all the same questions, and I completely agree that he should be critiqued for how this season has started out. I was just on the principle of getting him to come to Detroit, I think, is a very good thing. And I know a couple of people in the chat are bringing up the money, so I'll just say this with the money. Monty Williams is a very rich man. He was a very rich man before this coaching contract that he got. Didn't need that cash. He very comfortably could have sat out, so I'm sure it was nice, but I don't think that was a primary negotiator. Let's dive into some questions here. This is from our guy Camille. Brings up, is there a scenario where we press the panic button? Who would be untouchable for you? And are Jaden Ivey and Isaiah Stewart still there? And I want to bring this up first because we had actually planned to also rank, you know, the core four young players from, you know, best prospect to not best prospect, 1 to 4. So this is kind of in that same mold. So why don't we tackle both here right at the top? Who would be untouchable for you? Are Jaden Ivey and Isaiah Stewart still here? And then go ahead and give us a 1 through 4 ranking, Blake.
Yeah, I mean, the untouchable question I feel like is always hard because it's like you have to give up something good if you're going to bring in like a player that is at a star caliber, like second star caliber, whatever it may be. Right now for me, I guess untouchable would probably be Cade, Asar, and Duren. I know that leaves Jaden Ivey out after I just said all those good things about him. I just think he's the one prospect that you can potentially like be okay, but like weary about giving up in a trade if he is going to bring you back that like power forward, like wing that can shoot and play defense. He's just like not that position. So if there is a team that's looking for a secondary scorer or just to look at the potential, like I could see him having that value to bring back a player that the Pistons need. Stewart, like we've seen the defensive lapse since he's been out with injury. I think he's still important to this team. I don't think he's a long-term starter. But that said, like if Stewart was going to bring you back a piece that is going to help this team even more, I would include him. I know there's been reports about contenders interested in Stu, which I think says something about the player he is. So right now, those it would be Cade, Duren, and Asar who are untouchable for me. And if I had to rank the core four of those three plus Ivy, my rank right now would be Cade, Asar, Duren, and Ivy. I think my most controversial ranking in that is having Asar as number two, especially after he hasn't really been playing, getting many minutes for this team. The jumper still hasn't come along. I just think he's like such a good defender, and it's tough to find someone like that in this league. Will the jump shot come along? Like, I don't know. I'm sort of hoping he can find a way to like do things and be productive and be like an all defense guy without that, and basically like play his way into Monty Williams like not being able to take him off the floor because he's that important to the team. I've always been super high on him. I guess I still am in a sense. Like I think he just has a lot of work to do, but he has a ton of potential to be like a great defender in this league, one of the top, which are hard to come by, which is why I have him so high. Wes, where would you have all this?
So before I go, wanted to just ask you with Asar Thompson specifically, you know, obviously you did a plenty of deep dives on him in the whole pre-draft process. So my question is, do you think that he needs to develop a three-point shot to be a really impactful starter? Like, is that his swing skill, or is there something else that you'd focus on?
I think the tough thing is just, like, that paired with the fit of this team. Like, with his role, we really want that guy to be able to space the floor and shoot the ball, and that's just not what he's doing. So I think it really is like that swing skill for his role on this team. That said, I don't know if he necessarily like needs it to be that impactful for the Pistons. I think it matters who they're putting around him. Like we've seen playing him in the starting lineup with Cade and other non-shooters like isn't going to work. If you put additional shooters around him, like if you have Duren in there, the two other guys need to be able to shoot the ball, and then maybe it'll work. So it's tough just like fit wise, but I think he just needs to work on like scoring. Like he's a great playmaker, he's a great defender already. It's just like confidence, maybe getting a better whistle as he develops in the league. And hopefully the jump shot comes along. Like I'll admit it doesn't look great right now. Like maybe it will never come along, but I don't think it's broken. I think there's a long way to go, but I think it could be there.
All right. I'll go ahead and answer Kumo's question here. While I'm doing it though, we got a question from our guy, YouTube user, that I want you to think about because that's a follow-up to you. So he's wondering what power forward you would trade Ivy for. He can't think of a realistic option. So you do some good old podcasting research while I'm answering my question. Camille, I think in a situation where you press the panic button, to me, the only untouchable guy is Cade Cunningham. And it feels pretty obvious. He's the only guy that I think you can still pretty confidently say he's got, all NBA level ceiling. He's right now in the month of December, he played like an all NBA caliber player. So he's not a guy that I think you give up under any circumstances. He's the guy you should be building around. And in fact, I'll go so far as to even say right now, if you had, just a solid team of veterans who can shoot, score a little bit, and play a little bit of defense, just built around Cade Cunningham today, I do think you're probably competing for the play-in game. I don't know how much higher your ceiling is from that, if Cade's really your only young guy in a prominent role that's excelling. But I do think that's reasonable. He's playing legitimately that well. So Cade Cunningham's untouchable. Now, the rest of those three young guys, and as well as A.S. Stewart, I think it gets a little tougher. I got to the same place at the end, the same endpoint that you did, Blake, and looking at Jaden Ivey and thinking maybe he's the most likely to go. But I took a very, very different route to get there. I think Jaden Ivey's easily the second most valuable young player they have on the roster right now. I think, like, if you're looking at a trade and you want to get a bona fide star back, it's probably going to have to involve Jaden Ivey. He'd be the one that most teams would be interested in. So even though I would value Jaden Ivey very, very highly, if there's a star player that really fits well next to Cade, maybe you should think about it, making that kind of move. I'm not convinced for sure, especially now that Monty Williams has kind of elevated Jaden Ivey out of his doghouse. So I'm not sure I would do it, but I'm saying you'd probably think about it. So if Jaden Ivey's on the team, in like a total panic button move, maybe. I'm not totally sure. Isaiah Stewart, I kind of think still would be here. That's more a contract thing, though. He does have that poison pill, which means his cap hit goes way up if you trade for him. He's a very valuable player. I think he's paid correctly. So I don't know if teams would really want to pay him too much more just to acquire his services. Now, if I'm going to rank the core four, just to kind of finish my rambling answer here, it's Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Isaiah Thompson, Jalen Duren. Now, Cade Cunningham is obviously number one. So Jaden Ivey, I've got number two because he looks like an athletic guard who at least can score and make some very basic passing reads, which is all you really need as a secondary ball handler next to Cade. I really like that he prefers to score the ball rather than really facilitate. I think that plays well again next to Cade. So I think that those two are foundational. If you could find a way to maximize them on the court together, I do think there's a long-term future there with that as the backcourt and this Pistons team being a very good winning team. So Jaden Ivey, I think, is very, very valuable to me. I think he's a core piece. He's almost untouchable. The only reason he's not is because he probably pulls back the most value in a trade. So you might be convinced to think about it. Number three with Asar, I've got Asar and Duren pretty much neck and neck. I was explaining this to someone on Twitter earlier today that I think moving forward, you almost have to pick between Asar Thompson and Jalen Duren if you're really trying to develop this team around Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey. And that's just because neither of them can shoot. And I don't think either of them are going to learn how to shoot anytime soon. And you really need that court spaced out, right? When you're playing guards that need to get to the rim, like Cade and Ivey do. So I think Asar Thompson, just in terms of raw talent, his ceiling might even be higher than Jaden Ivey's. But I think he's a lot less likely to reach it. He'd need to improve his ball handling. He'd need to improve his finishing at the rim. He'd need to improve his ability to get to the free throw line. He'd need to improve his jump shot. Like, he'd need to improve his passing accuracy. We've seen that flash up a few times of him just chucking the ball into the third row. Like, he just has so many things to work on because he is so raw offensively that I think Ivy's a much safer bet. I don't really buy the jumper. I know you do, Blake, but It does look kind of busted to me. It's so inconsistent, and the free throw doesn't look nice either. But, all this said, if he can tighten up his handle, if he can really lean into his playmaking and athletic ability to get to the rim consistently in the future, you're looking at a guy that does fit that Andre Iguodala mold. That would be really, really valuable. So I would value that over Jalen Duren, who in a toss-up, to me, he just kind of looks like a lob threat who can rebound. He's kind of this what-if guy, right? Where you look at him and you go, okay, like if he figures out how to be a good defender, if he figures out how to like handle the ball when he's driving to the rim, and if he figures out how to shoot a jump shot, like then he could be really great. But all of those things are really tough to do, and he's not really shown the ability to do any of them yet. Like shot blocking is historically not something guys learn in the NBA. You either kind of have it or you don't. He doesn't dribble the ball a lot, and when he does, he's turning the ball over a ton. Against the Jazz, he had two turnovers, and he like doesn't put the ball on the floor. That he shouldn't have those turnovers. And then the free throws don't look good either. So that's just a bad combo all the way around. So I think he's fairly replaceable, but at the same time, he's probably going to pull the least amount back in a trade if you are going to look to trade one of these young guys. So I don't know what you do with all that. They're kind of in a tough spot with Ašara and Jalen Duren to me.
Yeah, and I mean the tough thing about Jalen Duren for me is like when he's on, like he looks dominant, and we've yearned, I guess, for a lob threat like him to play alongside Cade. That said, like Wes, I think those are all valid concerns, and I think what we have to hope for is that he's still not at 100% from all the ankle injuries he's dealt with. The first few games of the season, he looked pretty good defensively, but after that, as he's shuffled in and out of the lineup, I don't think he's looked great on that end of the floor. So I think you sort of just have to hope that that's what's going on, and it'll get better. But yeah, it all valid. I think Durin is, he would be tough to replace just because they've been looking for someone like him and finally have him and Cade haven't played together a whole lot until recently. So we'll see. And in terms of trading,
Real quickly, let me just say with the lob threat thing, Ašar Thompson's most salient role right now is either in the dunker spot or as a roll man, and I think he could be very effective in either spot. So, like, I'm not sure that you even lose much as a lob threat, at least in the short term. You can always try and augment that with a guy coming off the bench replacing Wiseman or Bagley. Or potentially Stewart, yada yada yada.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead. I just wanted to get that in there.
That's super interesting. And so would you play like Ašar alongside Stewart, would you think?
Yeah, if they could find hopefully someone better than Stewart, but if they could find a five that can shoot and block shots, I would. That's it. I think that's what I would do instead of Jalen Duren. Yeah, I mean there aren't a ton of those guys, but I look through. There are a few names. Some of them are fairly gettable. That's just the direction I'd go in the next year or two.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. And yeah, just to go back to the question about Ivy and what we'd give up for him, or what we would offer him up for, like one name, and I'll also bring it up because I know we have a pre-submitted question we were going to talk about later in the show, but I think the best option is Lauri Markkanen. I don't know if he's gettable. It personally, like if I'm Utah, I'm not giving him up. Like I don't really know what that would do for them, but I think he's like a player that's in the archetype that would fit great on this team, and he's someone who you would be more okay with giving up one of those younger prospects like Jaden Ivey for. I don't like Hunt Baker, who asked this question in the DBB comments, asked if Bogey and Stewart would be enough for Markkanen. I don't think so. I think you'd have to include an Ivy or one of the other, like Asar or Duren. And truthfully, I don't know if he's gettable. I think if he is, the Pistons would have to overspend. I would be willing to overspend a bit to get a guy like him. But I don't know if it's possible. So some other names for Ivy could be like a Kyle Kuzma or someone like that, just someone that can fill that spot and space the floor and can shoot the ball. Because like Wes has been saying, if Duren is your long-term like five man, you have to include some like shooters around him to maximize Cade. So we'll see. I know I would love Markkanen on this team. I just don't think he's gettable.
Yeah, I don't think he's gettable either. But Camille, man, thank you for that question. We were able to dive pretty deep into that. That was a lot of fun. So let's go to this one pre-submitted here from the DBB chat. This is from Coffee. He says, when Ivy's shooting 60, 75, 100, that's his splits for the game, why does he only get 20 minutes when Cade is shooting 3 of 16, 0 for 5 from 3, and then plays over 30 minutes? But so I think we could kind of take this into a bit of a deeper question, which might be why maybe Cade gets a little bit more leash than Jaden Ivey does, which I think is kind of what Coffee's getting to here. So a full context on the Rockets game, Jaden Ivey, he was 6 of 10 from the floor, 3 of 4 from 3, 4 of 4 from the line, played 26 minutes, so low minutes, good game from him. Cade, he obviously played really poorly, only played 30 minutes. And then I'll hop in real quick that, you know, the short answer to why Cade played a little bit more of that game or is just that, you know, Cade's probably their best chance to win games at this point. You know, like if he's cold, the best hope that they have is him snapping out of it, making some shots. And, well, obviously that didn't happen against the Rockets. And then I'll say for the Rockets specifically, starters' minutes were cut pretty short due to the blowout. So Cade played 30, Bojan played 27, Ivy 26. Those were the top 3 minute getters from the game. They were all pulled with roughly 7 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. So, you know, you'd think if it's not a blowout, all three of those guys are solidly over 30 minutes for that. So, yeah, if you go ahead, hop on in, why you think maybe Cade Cunningham has a little bit more of a leash than Ivy does maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just pretty straightforward in the sense that, like, Cade's the guy. Like you said, we need him on the floor to have our best chance at winning basketball games. Like, I know the argument there is like we need to have Ivy on the floor as well to have our best chance at winning games. But that said, I think when Ivy is off the floor, you can also have other scorers like Bojan, and there's something to be said about maybe giving Ivy some run with the second unit to make him the primary scorer in that unit. And then when there's like a blowout game, like what happened with Houston, it sort of throws a wrench into everyone's minutes. People are playing less. But yeah, I mean, I think the short answer here is like we know that this team's success hinges on Cade Cunningham. So he's going to get more of a leash, and it's on his like bandmates to make shots when they're not falling for him and maybe play defense a little bit harder when Cade is like doing everything on the other side of the floor. So like, does it make sense? No, but like, I think that's just how it is.
Yeah, I agree with you. So I want to spin a little bit of some positivity onto this one, because, you know, you look at Jaden Ivey, if you remember early in the year when there were blowouts, Jaden Ivey closed out the game with a lot of those end of the bench guys. Well, if you want proof, cold hard proof that Jaden Ivey is out of Monty Williams's doghouse now, it's that he was sat down with 7 minutes to go in a really bad blowout game and not brought back in at all. He didn't play any garbage time minutes. Monty Williams said, this guy's too valuable too valuable to have out here and risk injury in a game we're definitely going to lose. Let's sit him and get these other guys some run. And that's a great sign. So I'm taking the positive spin on this. I love that he only played 26 minutes when a guy like, you know, Asar Thompson played 24 and a lot of those right at the end.
We've come a long way from the start of the season.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. So let's hop on to this next one. An Asar Thompson question from our guy YouTube user. He asks, Blake, is it realistic to think that Asar Thompson can go from a zero-level scorer to a three-level scorer? He says that he's sure there are a few exceptions, but as a general rule, that doesn't happen too often. And I think he's right about that.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I do think there is a little bit of it that we're looking a little like maybe too deep into it when he's only like 35 games into his NBA career. Like, I think we knew as a prospect, like in the draft phase and once he was in the building, like he's going to have to work on being a scorer. Like, almost everything else is there, but that's like the one thing that needs to happen at OTE. Like, he was a good scorer. We all knew that like the jump shot was going to be his one thing to work on as he grew. So I mean, I think it's totally fair to think like, yeah, maybe the three pointer will never come along. Like, maybe he'll never be a guy that really gets any respect when he like pulls up from deep. But I do think he's shown that he can get to the rim. He can make plays. He can make things happen in transition. And I've also been like impressed with his mid range a bit, just like how high he gets up, how high his release is. I think it's really hard to block that shot. And if he can just like perfect that a bit, like he'll still be positive. Maybe that 3-point shot will never come along, which would be unfortunate just for his role on the team, but I still think he does a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, that little post spin 5-footer jump shot that he flashed a few times early in the year, I thought that one looked nice. You know, I wish he would get a little bit more lift on his 3-point shot, honestly, though I've got that same critique of Jaden Ivey as well. You know, guys that athletic, I feel like they should get a little bit more lift on the deep shots. But you know, with Asar specifically and on his offense, a YouTube user actually just brought this up. That was exactly where I was going to go. He's not efficient in the half court, but he's never been efficient in the half court. Even at OTE, he was very poor finishing at the rim in the half court. He would turn the ball over in the half court. But you get him out on the break when things are a little bit more fluid, there's a little bit more space. That's where he really thrives. So I guess, you know, if there's like a fourth level of score, I guess that's what Asar Thompson is right now. In the half court, I don't think you're expecting much out of him. If you can get him out on the fast break, then he could shine quite a bit. So I'm not sure he'll ever really need to be a three-level scorer. He just needs to be good enough on offense to make it worth playing him for all the good that he does on defense, which is a lot. So I would this season really like to see him get back into cutting more frequently. He did it more early in the season than he's been doing now. Just flashing to the middle of the paint, trying to make a play like that. I hope that he can do more of that moving forwards. And outside of that, you know, long term, it's the ball handling for me. If he can improve as a ball handler, then he can at least get to the rim consistently, even in the half court, because he's so athletic. So, you know, hopefully he can become a first level and fourth level scorer. So he'll score at the rim in the half court and then in transition and not much else. But that'd be good enough, right? Like, if he's an elite perimeter defender, that's good enough if you put other shooters out there around him. So that's kind of what I'm expecting out of him. And I think that's a good player. Still a very good player, a player I'd like to have on the roster. Wing defense is so valuable in the NBA. But yeah, I'm not sure he's going to be a three-level scorer. I'm not expecting it at all.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing with him. Just like making sure he can be playable on the offensive end so you can maximize like everything he brings and like taking on the top assignment on the other end of the floor. So Yeah, I think that's totally the thing with Asar.
All right, let's go to this question from Piston Air in the DBB comments, asking, a poor game by Cade resulted in a big loss for the Pistons. As we know, this is talking about the Rockets game. It says that Monty played Cade heavy minutes in the hope that he would catch fire, which we kind of talked about earlier. So at what point should Monty maybe have decided to look elsewhere for, you know, a lifeboat here?
Yeah, I don't know if he should have. Like you said, Wes, and like we've kind of been talking about, like Cade's our best chance to win games. Like he's what everything runs through. Last night when they were playing in Utah, like Bojan and Alec Burks were on fire as well. So that's just like tertiary nice things, but like you still need Cade there to absorb all that like defensive attention and just like enable the rest of the offense. So yeah, if like Cade's putting up like a huge stinker, like maybe you shouldn't have him play the minute volume that he plays night in and night out. But I like how many games have we seen from Cade Cunningham where he has like 4 points in the first half and then like goes off for like 15 to 20 first thing in the second half or the third quarter or whatever it is. Like I feel like that is always like bound to happen with him, and he's always took a while to like start cooking. Like some nights he's going right away, but a lot of times it doesn't come right away and you have to like wait for it to happen. So I don't know if he's looking truly off to start a game, if he should be like put on the bench and go elsewhere. So that's where I'm at. I just don't think there's really ever a true situation where you can look away from him.
Yeah, obviously I agree. You know, we did talk about it earlier. He's really their best chance. Even if he's in a funk, the best hope they have is him, you know, coming out of that funk and starting to make shots. So, I do think, you know, to me, this is a little bit of a roster construction issue. You look at the other players on the roster and, you know, okay, if Jaden Ivey catches fire, maybe that can lift you up. If Bojan Bogdanovic catches fire, maybe that can lift you up. You're not really going to count on Burks to do what he did in Utah. That was a really fun little blip from him, but that's not something consistently he's done in his career. He's generally just been a very good bench player. So there just aren't many options. And if you're looking for proven options that can go win you a game on your on their own, it's pretty much Cade, even though it hasn't resulted in a lot of wins this year, and nothing else. Bojan never had been that kind of guy either. So it's a bit of a situation where, you know, like any team, if you've got one star player and a lot of role guys, if that star player's off, it's kind of a lost cause, at least a little bit. It's going to be a lot harder for them to pull out the win. In this case, you have a young player who's trying to prove himself as a star and not much else. So it's resulted in the situation we're in now.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I just think you have to ride with him. Like he's this year, I mean, it's like a loss really, other than development at this point, and like figuring out if Cade is that guy. Like, and how else are you gonna figure that out if you don't let him like fight through woes and what he's going through and like find a way to make things happen when maybe like his bread and butter isn't working. So I just think you have to like ride with Cade into the ground for the foreseeable future.
All right, so this next one here is from Camille again. He asks, do you think we will make any trades soon? He doesn't have much hope. Why don't we extend this out just to the deadline as well? So before the deadline, are you thinking there are going to be moves made?
I feel like there has to be like if there isn't, it would be shot. Like I don't know how substantial of a move it would be, but I mean after like Gores came out and spoke to the media and said like he expects change, like Troy knows that he expects this. Like I think it would just be insane if nothing happened after like that was made public and all the losses and just how glaring the clunkiness of the roster is. Yeah, what those trades are, I don't know. I think the Ananobi Barrett trade kind of threw a wrench into things because maybe RJ Barrett was a guy that the Pistons went after if OG would have gave us like a handshake deal that he would re-sign here, which he probably wouldn't have. Maybe he's a guy you go after as well. But I think they have to do something. Like, how soon will the trade be? I don't know. January 15th is coming up when even more guys become eligible to be traded. I think the Ananobi trade, it was like rare to see a trade of that magnitude happen at the point that it did. So I think things will start heating up towards the middle of this month leading into the deadline. And man, if they don't make any trade, like I wouldn't know what to say.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think they're going to make a trade. I kind of think they're going to make two. I almost wonder if after the 15th here, when every player in the league is up and available for trade that doesn't have a no trade clause, I wonder if they make something happen pretty quickly after that. Maybe, not a large enough move where you've parted with one of those core four, but maybe something a little more substantial than just the eighth or ninth man in your rotation, and kind of see what you have from there. They are in a situation where, at least with the starting lineup, if you could get a good wing, maybe it fixes a few things. It doesn't fix everything. They're not going to be suddenly a fantastic team and competing and playing 500 basketball the rest of the season. But maybe, it lifts it up a little bit and they're just normal bad. And if that happens, then maybe you follow that up at the deadline with something else that kind of augments the roster a little bit more. To me, we've talked about it. I think you're looking at Cade Cunningham for sure. I hope Jaden Ivey as your two main guys. Those are what we're going to build around. So if they could get a head start at this trade deadline in shifting the roster to make things happen for those guys in particular, I think it would be really valuable and worth doing, just to, get a little bit of a head start on player movement in the off season. So I do. I kind of think they're going to be two. I'm not convinced of that. I'm not sure what the result's going to be, but I think they are going to make some moves.
Yeah, it. I mean, it depends on what's out there, who teams are willing to part with, and like Camille said, he doesn't have much hope that a move is coming, which I totally understand. I feel like it's at a point where, like, we've all known that change needs to happen. Everyone said it, but it's like, when's it gonna happen? And we won't believe it till we see it. So all I know is they have to do something to address the roster. Yeah, so I will run into the next question we have from Ben Golker from the DBB comments. He asks, what is a realistic win total for this team? Is single digit wins actually in play? Man, this is one that I have battled with personally. So, Wes, I gotta throw this one over to you first.
Single digit wins actually in play. I think they have to be. Like, it would be disingenuous for me to sit here and tell you no way they're definitely going to win more than nine games. They've just been so bad early in the year. Now, what do I actually think happens? I think, and I would like to believe that they do get up closer to 13, 14, 15. That's still unacceptable. If you go back on our YouTube page, you'll see me and Jack Kelly talking before the season started, saying that if they win in the teens number of games, people need to be fired. I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but I also think that, 13 games is an unacceptable outcome. So they're a bit in a no-win scenario here. It's not looking good. And yeah, I really hope that they don't win single-digit games.
Yeah, I'm in the same spot. It's just like when wins are like so hard to come by. Like, they should have won in Utah. They should have beat Utah the time they played them before. They should have beat Boston, and they didn't. They lose in like all these ways that are unfathomable. So when that happens, like, it's just tough to see the wins coming at a decent pace, or just like more often than not, like they have been. So yeah, unfortunately, I think single digit wins is very much in play. I hope there is some sort of change that we're all like talking about and hoping for, that just puts a little bit of spark into the team so they can rattle some off, at least, like, because it just, they finally won that game, and now it's like we're already kind of in another losing streak. And if we didn't play the Spurs in next week, like, when would they win another game? Like, in Utah was gettable and they didn't. So yeah, it's tough, but I'm with you. I hope they find a way to get to near 20. I highly doubt that happens, but at this point, like, I feel like that's the best you can hope for.
Yeah, and I'll just say these two things really quickly. One, I do think they have a shot against the Warriors. I don't think the Warriors are invincible, and they might get caught sleeping. The Pistons beat the Warriors last year at around the same time with, we've talked about it, less talent on the roster than there is now, somehow. So I'll say that. And then as well, obviously, before the season was starting, I was saying that if they win that few games, people need to be fired. I have, for the record, changed my tune, and I do need to call that out. I'm not convinced that that needs to happen. I'm just not convinced either way. I could see it going either way. I'm not sure. But I just wanted to make sure it was obvious that I'm not as hardline on it anymore before we get to the next question. So this is from Jumars on Twitter asking, why would Weaver not get rid of Wiseman and Hayes so that we don't waste minutes in a lost season trying to develop two guys that won't be here in 6 months? And then specifically saying that Marcus Sasser and Marvin Bagley are probably going to be on the roster next year. So what do you think about that with Wiseman and Hayes?
Yeah, well, I mean, looking toward Sasser, I think with that, like, he might just not be playing because he's not ready. He's definitely like regressed. I don't want to say that because it's a strong word, but like, he hasn't looked great in his minutes. So I agree, like, we need to find a way to develop him. Like, would it be assigning him to the G League for a game every now and then? Like, maybe. But with Wiseman and Hayes, like, I think they're still here strictly for personnel reasons. Like, they're clearly not a part of this team's future. So yeah, I think it's totally fair to say, like, their minutes should be eliminated or just dwindled down to almost nothing in favor of guys who have a shot to be a part of what we're building here in, like, for the long haul. So yeah, I don't know. I think it might just be because we're losing this many games. Like, we're trying to find different combinations. Wiseman has shown, like, flashes here and there. I mean, it's frustrating because he'll have a strong game and then just, like, come out and look lost for the next, like, two, three, however many games. Hayes, I think he might just be more of that secondary, like, ball handler in the second unit, especially, like, Wes, what you brought up. Ivy doesn't think he's a true point guard, and we're not, like, using him in that way. So I think Hayes is really, like, your true backup point guard, especially with Monte Morris still on the shelf. So I think it really is, like, personnel reasons. I'm not, like, looking into it too deep because I've almost, like, we just know that they're not going to be here for the long haul. So I think it's just using them and trying to make some sort of, like, cohesion with the guys that we have in the building, even though it's not working.
You kind of took the words out of my mouth there on this one. So I'll just say this quickly and then we'll wrap up and let you guys go. But Shout out to Keith Smith. He's doing some great work. You guys should be following him. Does a lot of NBA, just broadly cap stuff. He's an expert. He's awesome. But he puts out a piece talking about what the Pistons should do from here, where things should go. And he actually talks about this with James Wiseman, with Killian Hayes, a couple other guys that are standing in the way of some young players getting minutes. And he brings up that scene in Moneyball, the movie, where Brad Pitt comes down, says, "You can't play this guy anymore." And the coach is up in arms. "What do you mean? What do you mean I can't play him? I'm going to keep playing him. I'm the coach. You can't tell me what to do." And then Brad Pitt says, "Well, I traded him. He's not on the team anymore, so you can't play him." I agree. I agree with Doju Mars here. Like, you get rid of the guys that are in the way and are kind of a like a safety blanket for Monty Williams right now in the rotation. Hayes probably just needs a new home anyway. He doesn't look like he's having the best time in this low minute role that he's in at the moment. So I'd say that with Hayes. With Wiseman, I don't know, maybe they're still trying to figure out what they have with him there. They did play Bagley over him early on in the season, and I'm not convinced Bagley's going to be here much longer either. He's a pretty tradable contract, so maybe that's a little bit what the thinking is there. But yeah, in general, it would be a great thing if Troy Weaver came down and said, "Monty, you can't play these guys anymore because they're gone and there's no other choice now." I would very much be in favor of that. Yeah.
Yeah, I unfortunately I don't know if that's how the front office is thinking right now, but yeah, with some of the rotation decisions from Monty that we're all like questioning, like that would be an easy answer. But man, it I don't know. Well, hopefully a trade happens at some point soon. That's all I can say.
They need to make a move, definitely. So let's wrap it on up. This is a great show. Welcome back, Blake. Glad you had a fun trip. I mean, you missed the streak breaking win though, so how fun could it have really been, right?
That is true. That was a fun one to rewatch when I could, just because I knew the outcome. It's a little harder to rewatch the losses when I can't watch live. But shout out to you, Wes. Shout out to Brady and Sean for holding it down while I was gone.
Yes,
Yeah,
absolutely.
can't thank all you guys enough, and special thanks to everyone who joined. And special thank you to Sean Corp again for supporting this show, allowing us to do what we do here, powering the Detroit Bad Boys site, and really enabling us to run with the show. Shout out to everyone who joined, whether you're listening live or the recording, for all the great questions that you give us and talking points week in and week out. We'll catch you next week, whether on your commute or live with us here. We can't wait to talk more Detroit hoops with you all.